All right. There
you go. So starting again for future generations, this started working. I got a call and it messed up. 2019 problems. So today, my name is Brandon Chalker. I am 32 years old. Today is in January, and I am speaking with Megan Matthews, who is my mom. We are recording this interview in Whitewater, Wisconsin. So, Mom, tell me about the day I was born. How did you feel the first time you saw me and held me?
Overwhelmed. I felt wonder and, like, super cool and very scared and just thought it was pretty amazing that I was being trusted with this thing. And also that I could grow something like that. Like, how weird is it to think you can grow something like that inside you?
That's what I'm hearing now, yeah.
I bet. Yeah, no. But amazing. It was amazing and scary all at the same time.
Awesome. What was I like as a child?
Curious, open, engaging, kind, vulnerable, you know. And we had said before, but like it's like vulnerable because I didn't realize how vulnerable you were. And but looking back, I can see that you were vulnerable. Okay. But just like the fact that you wanted to know stuff and do stuff, and that was pretty cool. I really like that.
Yeah. What was I like as a teenager?
That was where we went to grumpy. Mm-hmm. I think you were grumpy because, well, you had said you think you were grumpy because you wanted to go on and do stuff, and I think that's absolutely part of it. I think you were also grumpy because of the family dynamic and some of the hurt that had happened, and you were trying to like figure out like. Well, you couldn't process it because how could you? You're a teenager. You're mm-hmm. processing being a high schooler, and you're processing wanting to go live your life and do your things. And so I think it was that combination of things, and you just wanted to be gone.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember high school basketball, too.
Oh.
The year you sat on the bench.
That made me grumpy.
Oh,
that
totally. And then rightfully so.
I just don't forget about that. Can you tell me about one of your happiest memories of me?
Sitting on the kitchen floor and chatting. I think all chatting, where we walk the dog and we go chatting, or you and I go to lunch and we chat. We sit around at Christmas and we talk. Just connecting.
Okay, and conversely, what is one of your least happy memories?
When I've hurt you, when I messed up. I was thinking about some of the things like when you were 3, 4, 5 years old. I did. There's some stuff that, you know, just you couldn't help that I did not handle well. And I look back and I think, oh, wow, I just messed up. And there's still scars, and that makes me so sad. Mm. But it wasn't anything like you did. It wasn't like I thought, oh, I was mad when you did this thing. It was more when I could tell that I hurt you.
Mm. So not like the stain on the couch.
Okay. No.
That's fine.
See,
okay.
See, and isn't that cool that that's not the issue?
Yeah, that's great.
I think that's pretty cool.
For the record, officially. How has being a parent changed you?
Patience is one thing. Recognizing people that we have, that when kids are born, you have this picture, this list, but then you realize, you know, no, I'd rather have them be who God made them to be than who I think they should be. And it's my job to encourage them to be the amazing person God has made them be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's less expectations, but it's just less picture of whatever it is. I think also I don't know, joy. Just you don't realize how much joy kids can bring you, like and worry. I mean, like when you see someone who you just love unconditionally, uncontrollably, what's the word,
irrationally,
that's actually the word, irrationally. Barb Warner talks about the fact that everybody needs someone who loves them irrationally. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I love my kids. And that's not something I used to be able to do. I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Realizing the importance of that has, I guess, changed me. And the ability to do that, because I didn't have that before I had kids. You can't. You don't realize it. You don't have that gift. But that has changed. And thinking just that there's investing my life in, I joke about this sometimes too, like when I'm being overprotective. And I'm like, you invest 22 years of your life or 32 or 19 years of your life in somebody and see if you're not going to want to make sure they got home safe.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of, I think, irrational sort of, and irrational may be a strong word for that piece, but just, you know, strong vibe to also protect.
Yeah.
Man, man, protection was huge.
Yeah.
It was big for me.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. So then kind of on a similar note, if you could do it over again, how would you raise me differently?
I'd have more patience. And I would, you know, one thing, when I saw this question, I thought, you know what I would not have said to you? There was a time in your life when you wanted to be a professional baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked you in the eye and I said, Brandon, you're not going to be a professional baseball player. I wish I had said that.
Yeah.
I really wish I hadn't said that. I mean, whether you were or not, that was real irrelevant. I feel like I squished something in you. And that makes me sad.
What do you think at the time was the logic? Like, what was going on where you felt like, whatever age I was, that was the necessary thing to say? Like, what do you think was driving that? Feeling that was like, I'm leading this child, like that is right, right? Because it wouldn't have come out of a place of hate, I don't think.
No.
Like, what would have been the logic behind that? Because I think I remember that as well.
It was that I wanted you to recognize that there was other things you needed to pay attention to, like school, you know, and people. And because you were so, and what I also didn't want you to do was to be sad that if that didn't happen. Like, I wanted you to recognize there's so many other things that you had to contribute to the world, that if that didn't happen, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that you were going to get so focused on that you'd lose track of all the other things you could do.
Right, and we're probably taking into account the calculations that there was a high likelihood that I wouldn't. And the potential for failure was like, you know, could be life-changing in that way. So it was more pragmatic.
It was
probably
trying to be just pragmatic. Like,
mm-hmm. But in theory, you'd now probably reflect that it as like, yes, that could be an option, but in accompaniment, there are these necessary things kind of a thing?
Yes, okay. I would have said it differently. Totally would have done it differently.
Do you feel like that, I mean, that came to mind when you were reading it, is there... Is that reflective in just other types of conversations or feelings throughout my childhood that you would agree where you were like that in a lot of circumstances, or is it just like that kind of thing?
Because
you've never been a real dream crusher.
No.
You know, it's never like that, but do you feel like that was just born out of like Midwest pride? You know, like it's a curious thing, you know?
I think that's the only moment I remember where I feel like I crushed him.
Okay.
Other than that, I feel like I was always like, well, sure, you're smart enough. Go do.
Right.
You're people. You can do it. Mm-hmm. And so that was the one.
Okay.
I would have had more patience. I would have, I think I would have spent more time listening.
Okay.
I think, you know, to you. Not just the chatting part, but like, I wish I would have known your love language. I wish I would, because you know, I realized later on that I think your love language at least at one point was gift giving,
mm-hmm.
and because I was trying to be, or gift getting, you know, getting gifts, and because I was trying to be pragmatic and teach you that it isn't about material things, that it's about the people in your lives. I didn't give you stuff because I was trying to do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
but I think that came across as me not caring about you. And then when you had the dynamic of this person talking about how I wasn't spending money on you anyway, and all the rest of that. The message you got was that you didn't have value and that I didn't love you as much as I really did love you. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would have changed that.
Interesting.
I wish I'd known that first earlier.
Okay. So this was one that I thought you might like because you're a great singer of future generations. Can you sing me the songs you used to sing me as a baby? And can you remember any of the stories you used to tell me?
Okay, two songs. People will recognize this. Good morning to you. Good morning to you. We're all in our places with bright, shiny faces. This is the way to start a new day. Right?
I remember that one. Yeah, I remember that very vividly. That was a good one.
And the other one is, we love you, Brandon. Oh, yes, we do. We love you, Brandon, and we'll be true. When you're not near us, we're blue. Oh, Brandon, we love you. Da 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 da.
Those are both good, yes. Applause from the crowd. I like that one. Were there any stories that came to mind or anything in particular?
No, actually, because, I mean, some of the later questions talk about family stories.
Yeah,
they'll come up then,
okay.
I think.
Okay. You kind of mentioned this. Is there anything outside of what you've said already, just best advice for raising kids? Is there anything just that you haven't said so far that if you were just reflecting, you'd say, like, here's something that I would recommend when you're raising kids?
Look at them for who they are, not who you think they should be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you certainly should hold people to standards because that shows them they're capable of meeting standards, mm-hmm. right? And you teach them right from wrong and you have consequences and there's all those kinds of things. It's not about not having roles or rules or boundaries. It's about accepting people just for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, um, let people fail. You know, it's hard to watch people you've invested in fail. I say that kind of hypocritically, because I always want to help, you know, because I want you guys to feel good about yourselves and I want you to feel like, you know, whatever. But watching someone who you love trip up, it's like having the skin pulled off. It's awful. But people had to watch me do it.
Sure. It's just a part of it.
It's just because then you learn the lessons you're supposed to learn. Okay. Not the ones that I think you should learn.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we're getting into some other than just me things. So one I thought was interesting is, what are your wishes for me?
Joy. Contentment. Knowing, my wishes for you. Knowing your place in this world, knowing how much God loves you, and knowing how much we love you. I really want you to know my wish for you. There may be another question later on, but my wish for you is that you know that you're a part of this, that you're a valuable part of this, mm-hmm. and that, you belong.
We like okay. you.
We do. I like belong. That. You okay. belong.
So this is a little bit more on the family lineage? No, I don't remember what that is. Genealogy? So who were your grandparents, your great-grandparents? Do you have any memories of them, and what kind of work did they do?
Okay, so let's see. Grandparents, I had Gladys and Carl Hansen. Okay. And they had nurseries, plant nurseries. Hmm. And there's lots of stories behind those, but essentially they were my mom's parents. And Gladys was... Mom was a lot like Gladys, and I think I'm a fair chunk like my mom. Fun, enjoyed life, had a hard life. Carl was not an easy man to live with. I don't want to speak ill of people I didn't know super well about, but I do not believe her life was easy. But man, she was like, okay, I've got kids to raise, business to run, things to do, whatever, I'm gonna move on. And she did. And so like I remember going and she taught me how to play solitaire. And wow. She told phenomenal stories. And she always, when I went, there was a time when they were living in our out the farmhouse, and they lived in a trailer back in the back. They kind of like, from what I hear, they just sort of showed up one day with the trailer and said, guess what, we're here. Because they had, my grandpa went bankrupt a couple of times, and with his nursery, and I don't know the stories on those. Yeah. But anyway, so they showed up. And so grandma, I would go there after school, and she would give me cookies, like these really cool, good chocolate cookies. And then she would teach me how to play solitaire, and she would tell me stories about the family. And that was really... So yeah, I have really good memories of my grandma Gladys.
Yeah.
Then on the other side, my dad's mom... My dad's dad died when he was like 40, so I never knew him. My dad barely knew his dad.
Really?
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah, he died of a heart attack out in the middle of South Dakota. And so my grandma... Grace, she was grumpy, but the thing was she I didn't get the worst of her, because I was like the youngest of everybody, and my dad they felt like my dad was her favorite kid. But when everybody talked to everyone else, she kind of made this dynamic where everybody thought that everyone else was her favorite. So I think that was just the way she tended to talk about people. She didn't like my mom. And, you know, there's lots of reasons why that might have been the case. But so there was a lot of negatives with Grandma Grace. Mm-hmm. However, the positive with Grandma Grace was, and I always want to say this because it's important to remember the positives about people, she taught me how to read. Mm-hmm. There was, because at school, because the way I had grown up, and when I was growing up in school, I hadn't gone through the phases of childhood. Like, I there was a Piaget at that point, and I didn't, right? And I didn't crawl. And my mom was always like, you didn't crawl because we were living in a two-bedroom student housing and there was five grown-ups around you. I mean, no, you weren't going to get stepped on. You didn't crawl. So, the school wouldn't teach me how to crawl. They sent me to a special gym class to learn how to bounce a ball and do things. And that, it was well-intentioned. I get it. And my dad, thankfully, was there saying, she needs to be taught how to read, but they wouldn't do it. Well, anyway, so my grandma came over one summer and she taught me how to read.
Wow.
Because she was a teacher. Okay. So the way my grandma kept her kids clothed and fed and in a house was she started teaching. So think about this. You have three kids. You're a widow in South Dakota in the 30s. Yeah. Can you imagine trying to survive that? Mm-hmm. And so, but she did. Yeah. She was obviously incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And that might have also made her grumpy because, you know, she invested in these kids. And then, like, my dad married my mom. And they, you know, that didn't happen the way my grandma would have liked it. And whatever. So she definitely had a strong personality that wasn't always easy. But she was strong.
Okay.
And I always take comfort in that. Like, whenever I'm kind of going through, like, some of the stuff that I'm like, you just have strong women in your family.
Yeah.
And all of them have been strong. So, okay. So then I don't know the great-grandparents on my dad's side so much. I mean, like, let's see. Would have been Bert and Floyd, Floyd Augustus, and then would have been Augustus, Hiram Augustus? I don't know. Anyway, they were in South Dakota. And one of them was, I don't know if my great-grandfather was the orator, where they talked about the orator of the... So basically he went out and he did speeches.
Hmm.
And he talked about stuff. And... I'm not sure if he was my grandpa or if he great grandpa or if he was someone like an uncle, but
okay.
As a whole, they were out there changing South Dakota where they live. Like, there was one who did a Chautauqua movement where they basically took land and they brought in speakers, and then they turned kind of like almost not like a theme park, but like a campground where people would come and do stuff,
yeah.
and learn things, and can you imagine that? And they still have a park. I forget what it's called, Ruskin Park, I think, but like they did that kind of a okay. thing. Now, my mom's side, so my dad, my grandpa's dad was Niels Hansen, and he was the one that went exploring all over Siberia and China, finding new plants to bring to South Dakota for the USDA department.
Mm-hmm.
And then he married Pamels, and the Pamels actually from Wisconsin. There was a Professor Pamel in at Madison. And La Crosse, actually. So there's a lot of connections there. And so there's Niels, and then there was Emma, and then there was, and then Emma died of an appendicitis attack while she was pregnant in a snowstorm in South Dakota. I know, right? And then Grandma Manbeck, so Grandma Hansen, Gladys, mm-hmm. she was a Manbeck, and she kind of came from a kind of a crazy family, if you will. Like they lived in a sod hut, seven kids in a sod hut. Jeff Manbeck was the one we talk about, Crazy Jeff,
mm-hmm.
where he, you know, but the thing is, all this stuff that he thought should happen has happened, and it's been good. But, depending on how you hear about him, he either was a ne'er-do-well who left his wife and seven kids in a sod hut in the middle of South Dakota, or he was, you know, this champion of change, and it just kind of depends on which sure. side of the family you look at.
So, like, the next question is, are there any... great stories you know about an ancestor, chances are Jeff might have been one of the generators of something like that.
Oh, totally. Wait, yeah, Crazy yeah. Jeff. And I don't know tons of personal stories about him, but Grandma told a lot mm-hmm. of stories about Crazy mm-hmm. Jeff. And yeah, depending on how you look at it, he was either awesome right. or crazy.
And Niels had a lot of good stories too, right? I mean,
yes.
all sorts of stuff, like love letters across Siberia and all that kind of a thing.
Yep, okay. Yeah, he did. And Helen has this whole book with a paintbrush and a muslin bag or whatever it is, and basically it's all the love letters. So he decided he liked Emma Pamel when they were going to school at Iowa. And by the way, Emma was one of the first master's degrees in science cool. as a female
okay.
in the early 1900s. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, and then so he fell in love with her. She did not want to have anything to do with him. So he went off to Siberia. He started writing her love letters. But actually not love letters, just friendship letters. He was like, okay, so, and then there's this whole, you know, dear Miss Pamela, blah, 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 blah. And toward the end, he literally proposed to her by mail wow. from Russia. Can you imagine that? So, like, he proposed to her and it took the mail like 2-3 months to get, and then he had to wait another 2-3 months for the letter to come back. I can't even imagine what that would have been like.
It'd be bizarre.
I know. But yeah, those, then I had a, apparently there was a cousin Charlie who ran off to the circus and then came back and was somehow not well, we don't know what with, but mm-hmm. anyway, and so he and Crazy Jeff lived in a sod hut down by the river in wow. the county farm.
Okay.
So.
That really is going to cover this family stories one. You had said a joke earlier, but are there any classic family jokes or songs that you can share? I mean, was there anything? The one you had said before, it reminded me, the bad joke one or whatever. What was that one that Grandma used to say to you?
Yep. Yeah. The Grandma basically used to, and she didn't really, like, say it a lot, but Todd reminded me once, and it was always the attitude, was that if someone disagrees with you or doesn't like you or doesn't accept you, basically they either don't have enough information or just telling a really bad joke.
Yeah, I like that.
And the point of it is, you know, yes, we need to accept input from people and accept things from people, but they don't get to pick how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty cool. And my mom had, I had a song, there's the doll one, I can't remember that song. Then there's the one, something back on his haunches he sat.
The cat on the kitchen floor or something?
The bar room. I won't waste time thinking of it. But there's one that Grandma had that was picked up the beer from the bar room floor and back on his haunches he sat, and all through the night you could hear him shout, "Bring on the gal darn cat."
Okay.
And so anyway, that was a good one that she used to sing a lot. And
she had that Army Ranger one too.
Oh yeah, the Hua one. Yeah. I want to be an airborne ranger. I want to live a life of danger. There was that one, and then she also there's rioting in Africa. Oh, la, yeah. La 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 la. They're starving in Spain. La 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 la. So she used to sing that one a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good.
Happiness runs in a circular motion.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Such as like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you set yourself free. Totally 60s song, but she used to sing that all the time.
So that was a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is more outside of the family genealogy. This is more about just kind of your growing up initially, and there's a little bit more about you. So tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like.
I grew up between Whitewater and Milton, Wisconsin. My first 10 years was idyllic. I was the last of four kids. My mom always jokes that I was the only one my dad was ready to be a parent to, because mom and dad had kids at 18, 19, and 20. Mm-hmm. 21, and you know, they were just trying to, and then dad was going through school, and they were just trying to kind of grow up themselves, and the kids have said that too. They've said that he was a different dad to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful that I was able to have that, because the first 10 years was I had ponies, I lived out on a farm, everybody took care of me, it was awesome. And then my dad died, and then the way I usually summarize the next 10 to 12 years was both mom and I were lost. Mm-hmm. Mom got very sad, just depressed, and she was trying to figure out who she was and all the rest, but there were consequences of that, and so I was very sad and lost. Mm-hmm. Made some stupid mistakes, and that was silly. I don't know how else to put it. I don't blame mom, because she was never mean. Mm-hmm. I always had a house over, I always had food to eat and clothes, and she always took care of me. Mm-hmm. It was just she was just lost.
Yeah.
And then I was lost, and so that was when the Cooks came in, you know, the Cook family. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of made sure that I didn't stay lost.
Yeah.
They just kind of said, yeah, come hang with us. And that is one reason why I always want to make sure, like when we've got lost people around us, that they know, just come hang with us. You know, you can't be destructive. You don't let destructive people into your world, but you can, if someone's needs a space, come hang.
Yeah. So the next one is more about like, what was your relationship like with your parents? And I'm imagining that's probably from the totality of the world. Do you have any thoughts on that? Just like, and how your relationship was with grandma, just overall through time, your dad, like anything that comes to mind for that?
My dad, I just remember being a princess with him. Like he, you know, he wrote me I have this poem that he wrote me, you know, last in the lack. By the time we got back, our Goofy was asleep. Still my still my love and feelings for her are very deep. Mm. That's pretty
cute.
Cool.
Yeah,
you know? Cute. And I think I told this story before, and if it's lost, I'll say it again, and I'm going to try not to cry. But like when I was in Texas and I needed to come home. Mm-hmm. And I called my mom and I said, "Mom, I'm sorry, I messed up. I need to come home." And she just said, "Maggie, just come home. We'll figure it out." Mm-hmm. And I mean, so that summarizes a relationship, you know, like mom, I always knew mom loved me, and I always knew mom thought that I was amazing and I was a gift to the world. And I'm so thankful for that, because there are so many people in this world who had all sorts of money and things and stuff, and they didn't know, they didn't have that from their parents.
Yeah.
So my summary is that, you know, they weren't perfect, but they loved me. And I'm thankful to them for what they instilled in me. That, because here's the thing, when I call it my detour, you know, like when I went down to Texas and all that good stuff, and I learned a lot about myself, but I also remembered who I was, and they taught me who I was, and they and the Cooks, you know, and I'd also accepted Christ by that time, and so I had this knowledge of God, and I when I was off in these other places, it wasn't that it was so terrible, it was just. It just wasn't where I should stay, and I'm thankful to them.
So how would you describe the difference between when, like, the lost years of you and your mom's relationship versus, like, when you came back? Like, what was the main difference? Did you feel like you started anew? Did you pick up where you guys had left off? Like, you're different people. You had a child. Mm-hmm. She had maybe gone through her phases of life and was in a new phase, new husband. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you describe that relationship? Like, closer than ever? Was it totally. You talked more, reflected on the world? I know I was around a lot. What did that look like?
We had life, we talk about those life, God, and the universe conversations, mm-hmm. sitting out on the back porch. No, it was very close.
The spirituality wasn't a part of her world, right?
No, not so much. I mean, she sort of acknowledged it was a God, but she didn't go any beyond that. I think it's because she'd been hurt.
But she did acknowledge she felt there was a higher presence to the world.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And she was sober by this time. Okay. And so that was, that was cool. Absolutely. I don't know. I trusted her. She took care of you guys. She was pretty instrumental in moving me forward into a healthier place in my life. Mm-hmm. And that was very cool.
Okay.
Very cool.
So tell me about your siblings. Were you close with them?
Not when we were grown up. Now, it was because I was 10, 11 years behind them.
Because you got Todd. Remember, it's Todd Rohde, Ren Rohde.
Robin
Rohde.
Right, those are the
three.
Okay. Yeah, and growing up, I was kind of the bother. I was like, Robin always talks about having to take me out on dates with her because just someone had to watch me, and the boys, whatever. So, growing up, not so much. They weren't mean to me. It's just that was like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But now I'm very thankful we're close. I mean, I wouldn't say we're best buddies and we want to hang out all the time, but we respect each other. We respect each other's differences, the similarities. They're cool people.
Have you had to go through hard times with them? Like maybe you would describe your and your mom's sort of like transformation. Like was any of that present, or have they always been sort of removed because of the age? Because assumedly they would have probably gone through their own version of this story, but like I've never heard from Todd like the effect of your dad dying on his life or how it changed him. Like did you feel like you guys had a shared existence in that way, or are they just kind of different?
I think it was different. We've never really talked about it with each other. I mean, it's not like it's verboten. But we just never really went there. They have talked about the fact that they had a different growing up experience than I did. Again, younger, doing things, living in the married student housing, three kids and two bedrooms. I mean, it was just, so they just had a different growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really talk about that. What the effect dad's dying had on them.
Because that's a generations changing event, your dad dying.
Oh, totally.
But so like Ren would have been the second to you, right? Youngest, was he out of the house by that time?
Oh yeah, no. Oh, so Robin, Ren, and Todd were all out. So dad died, I think, when Todd was 19.
Okay.
And then so Ren would have been 21-ish, whatever, and Robin would have been. So it was different for them. And they didn't know. I mean, they've talked about the fact that my mom talks about the fact that we all kind of got lost at the same time. Like she said, there was a time after dad died and when mom was, sad, and we were all lost. We were all kind of figuring stuff out. And she said, so we all fell apart at the same time, and then we kind of all came back together. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We didn't really talk about that, or I don't know.
I would just be curious. And similarly, do you feel like your dad would have held it all together?
No.
If he hadn't have died, do we feel like that life would have gone on this, idyllic path like you described the first 10 years? Or do you think, it's impossible to know, but it's a curiosity.
I don't know. I really don't know. Because it wasn't like my dad was the super strong one. My mom was probably the strong one. She was, and I say that with complete respect for my dad. Mm-hmm. He was a good guy. But my mom was the one, she was the grown up. She was the one who always kept a job. She talked about traceable employment. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this with you guys, She was always the one who said, you have to have traceable employment, house for you, basically. And even when I came back and stuff, she was like, Meggie, you got to make sure that you can take care of Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
You do whatever you have to do. I don't care what the rest is. You make sure you take care of your son. And I think that was because that's what she did with all her kids. And dad was off going to school and kind of going to camp and doing his thing and, growing up himself. And mom had three kids. And so she had to be the grown-up.
Yeah.
And so I think actually mom was probably the one who kept us together.
And just for posterity's sake, because we haven't really gone into deep detail on those two, the name of your mom, the name of your dad, and I'm sure maybe you could even give a greater historical reference of their time, but just since those in the future may not know, what was their path in a somewhat abridged version?
Bert Rohde was my dad, and he basically was a kind of a wild child growing up. And then one of our quick stories is that they sent him out to Montana for a year to live with Uncle Serino, to live on a ranch, because he needed kind of to grow up. And so he went out to Montana, came back, and then mom basically met and got married when she was 18 and he was 19. And that was South Dakota, mid-50s. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what people did. And then they had three kids. And then dad basically kept going to school. He was a lineman for the county. We always joke, there's a song, a Glenn Campbell song called Lineman for the County. And dad was one of those. For, okay. And then, but mom got traceable employment. And then dad kept going to school, and he went to Michigan for his PhD.
Okay.
And he got a PhD. He was all but dissertation. He didn't finish his dissertation in education and special education. So he got into that field of special education just as it was going, mm-hmm. which is pretty darn cool. And the story is that, here's the story about my dad was, you know, because he was a wild child and kind of whatever. He had all his research done. He was writing his paper, and he was coming back from Michigan. And he put all his research on these like computer cards in the mid-60s on top of the car and drove off. And so all his research flew off the top of the car. And he was like, I'm done. I'm out.
That's wild.
I know. Can you imagine? So anyway, that's the story anyway. Okay. And he died when he was 42 in 1976.
Yeah. Which I guess I didn't realize that his grandpa had died so young. That's crazy.
My brother Ren said he was looking back generationally. The last four generations of roadie men, mm-hmm. He's like the first one to live over the age of 50. Huh. It's just wild. So anyway, and then mom just always worked. She just mm-hmm. always worked and made sure we had food and clothing and took mm-hmm. care of us. And she actually grew up a rich kid in South Dakota because mm-hmm. her family had the nice house and the business. And she was this granddaughter of Niels Hansen, who by that time was a minor celebrity over in South Dakota.
Sure.
And so. Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame now, actually. So if you want to go look, he's in the Hall of the South Dakota Hall of Fame because he's recognized by the USDA Department as having done all this really cool research.
Okay. That's cool. Okay. And her mm-hmm. name was Carlene.
Carlene Hansen.
Okay, Carlene Hansen. All right.
Daughter of Gladys Hansen.
How do I get back to our pictures now that we're still have cell phones in 2019, friends?
Brandon.
So the next question on the list is... Ooh, here we go. What are the most important lessons you have learned from your husband? This starts to get more into the marriage side of things.
Yeah. From Lair, I've learned listening. He's a phenomenal listener. I've also learned about, doing what needs to be done, even when it's not what you want to do. Those are the two big things.
Mm-hmm. And for, again, posterity's sake, so you were married to my dad.
I was married to Randy Chalker.
For 4 years, was it?
Yeah, like 19 about to 22, somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then divorced. And then you guys met not too long after that, maybe 2 years or somewhere in that time frame?
Yeah, because we got married in 1990, so okay. And you were like 4 and a half.
Okay, so for the most of my life, Larry's been a part of it as a father figure, and that's kind of where that all plays into this story. Okay, mm-hmm. Tell me about your and Larry's happiest moments together.
I actually think it's it's family times, like when we were up in Door County together doing stuff, mm-hmm. Or Christmases, like we were talking about this Christmases where we all sit around. Remember a couple of times we've sat around, we kind of said what we appreciate about mm-hmm. each other? Some of my best memories. Okay. Yeah, no question about that.
Okay, similar to the sitting on the kitchen floor. So talking has been a big part of
life. Yes, talking is a big part of my life, no question.
So this is more, I think, into some of just like feelings that you have. Mm-hmm. And so to talk about what does religion / spirituality mean to you, and what role does it play in your life today?
For me, it's huge. Because I just know that I know without God, I'd be in a completely different mm-hmm. place. I remember the short story is I remember the time when, and I want other people to hear this, there was a time when I'd come back and I was kind of figuring stuff out, and I was at a meeting and someone said, do you realize that if you were the only person on the face of this earth, God would have come down and saved you? Mm. Do you realize that he loves you so much that it isn't about crowd control? He came down for you. And I remember when I was like, oh my gosh, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not super external with my faith. You know, I'm not someone who's going to go up to someone and say, do you know Jesus? That's mm-hmm. just not how I'm going to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was big to me, to belong to this, to know that I was loved that much. And God is just, the Cooks were had a majorly strong faith, and they were pretty instrumental in my having a faith.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's huge. It shapes how I try and walk through my days. My purpose in life is to influence people's lives for good. That's mm-hmm. why I believe that God put me here on this earth. Mm-hmm. And that can mean so many different things, whether it's through teaching or encouragement or whatever it is. And it's because God gave me that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Were the cooks your first introduction to religion, or had you been brought up in that space at all?
I was brought up Episcopal, so I'd gone to church and had Sunday school, and mm-hmm. it was good, and I tried it mm-hmm. It was much more
Was it every Sunday you'd go to church as a kid?
No.
Or were you more like the Easter and Christmas family?
And a couple of Sundays in between, but that was about it.
The cooks showed you a different version of what that faith could look like. Were they Lutheran, or what was their religious background?
Baptist.
They don't strike me as non-denom.
They're certainly not charismatic. Mm-hmm. None of that. But they were more Baptist-ish kind of. Mm-hmm.
This would have been early 70s.
Maybe Methodist-ish, you know.
Like early late 70s kind of a thing you'd have been.
Early mid 80s.
Mid 80s when you'd have really been
I'm wrong. Or? Late you're right. Late 70s because 76 was then 10. So late 70s, early 80s. Yeah, would have been then.
I just think late 70s, ardent Baptists, you know, like that type. I mean, so it's different in religion today, but that sort of, it's just interesting that those were the factors and the people that were kind of shaping, right? It would have been a very interesting place to be in Watertown or however it was.
In Milton?
Yeah, Milton.
And they weren't, like I said, it wasn't they went around handing out tracts or anything.
Yeah, right.
They just saw someone who was needy and they pulled me in.
Yeah.
And I remember Shauna saying, Shauna liked me no matter what, mm-hmm. you know, and I realized, why am I hanging around with people who don't like me?
Yeah.
And Shauna, one of the wisest things Shauna ever said to me was, Megan, I realize that the harder you laugh, the sadder you are.
Hmm.
And she saw that when no one else did. And that has been true. And so anyway, that was one. And so that just touched me. And she was like, yeah, come along.
That was Shauna Cook, who was their daughter, right?
Yeah.
And kind of was a friend. Okay. Mm-hmm. And still is a friend today in 2019.
Absolutely.
So on that note, is it important to you, and I'm going to guess the answer is yes, of course, but is it important to you to pass on your religious and spiritual beliefs to your children? And I would assume the answer would be yes, but more so why?
Yes, it is. And it's because I know how much God has done for me, out the peace. And it's not like things are always easy, because they're not. Mm-hmm. But I know knowing that God loves me has gotten me through so many hard times. And I want that for my kids. That's actually something I pray for my entire family almost every day, is that my kids and their spouses and their kids would know God in a way that brings them to Him, and mm-hmm. that they know He loves them, and that they belong there with mm-hmm. Him. And I want them to know how much He loves them.
Yeah, that's cool. So we're getting down. We've got 7 minutes left, so I think there's a couple of these last ones I just thought were kind of interesting that I thought would be fun to get through. So one is, can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences in your life?
Well, my mom, obviously, mm-hmm. And my dad. The cooks mm-hmm. were huge. Mom Cook, Joyce Cook, and John Cook, and Shauna. Who else? I mean, God, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Who else has been a big influence? I guess I'll leave it there for the moment. Okay. I mean, and my siblings have been big, too. My sister, Robin, she's my big sister, and she tells me how I should do stuff.
Yeah,
She's pretty cool.
Cool. Can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
Oh, I've given you a lot of them.
You have, yeah.
You know, I think it's when I hang out with family.
Okay.
I really do. There's so many times when we've been able to hang out as a family, like today, mm-hmm. and I'm so thankful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of my happiest times.
So the last couple, I think, are ones I'm particularly interested in, and I'll name them both off. So the first is, how would you like to be remembered? So ruminate or think about that for a moment. And then the last is, thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing they may hear this recording, is there anything you'd want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you'd like to share? So maybe on the first one, on just the how would you like to be remembered? I know you've talked a little bit about this is kind of what you believe you're here on earth for, but I'm sure that plays a role. But just in general, is there what you'd like people to remember you for?
I want people to remember me for the joy I have in life. And not joy because things are always great, but joy because of God. Joy because of the joy I have in Christ, that I liked people, that I made them laugh, or and I enjoyed them, mm-hmm. that I like I liked people. They're like my favorites. So I want to remember it that way. I want to remember it as someone who was fun to be around. Not necessarily just a barrel of fun, but like was encouraging. I want people to think, that's what I think about with like my mom. You know, my mom taught me that people were important. Harmony was important. Encouraging people was important. Getting and looking beyond the immediate to the long-term goal with your relationship is important. So I want to be remembered for those things. I always joke about it. I'm going to be the junk food grandma. I really do want, if it's green Jello and marshmallows and whatever and stale chocolate, I want my grandkids and kids after me to go, she was fun.
Yeah.
She liked us. That's what I want.
And you said kind of your grandma, like in the Gladys sense, maybe had that kind of like same sort of feeling. And so maybe continues to go down the line sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then what do I want people to hear?
Yeah, so just thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you'd want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you'd like to share?
Well,
this is your wise moment to share for generations. Your sage thing.
That's really intimidating.
No. I'm saying no pressure.
Yeah. 4 minutes and 6 seconds.
Right.
Go.
Yeah. And 4 minutes or less.
Well, actually, I don't know if it'll take that long. what I want them to know are that God matters. Mm-hmm. That God loves them. That He is real. And I don't know where the world's going to be in 200 years. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know where faith is going to be in this society. But I want them to know that that He loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And that He wants the best for them. And I don't care what's going on with them in their life right that moment. I know this really tough happens, but He loves them.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to be kind. I want them to realize that everybody, there's this saying that goes around, everybody's fighting a battle. You just don't know what it is. And so grace is really important, because we can impact people's lives positively or negatively. It's our choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to think about what they don't know about the people they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I think about that with my students a lot. You know, students come in and they're sleeping or they're grumpy or whatever, and I'm like, you know, I have no idea what you just went through.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of night you had, whether you got along with people, whether you did something stupid, whether someone did something awful to you, I don't know. And so my job isn't to judge you on how you're behaving. My job is to care about you and show you you matter no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know. And I want people to think about that. I want them to think about the absolute, there's a purpose for them on this earth. And figure it out and go do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this, I talk about this, I've said this sometimes, you know, people say, you think you're God's gift to mankind.
Hmm.
You are. See, that's the thing. I want people to know they are God's gift to mankind.
Yep.
And so let's figure out what that gift is,
mm-hmm.
and then go do it. Because there's nothing like fulfilling the purpose that you were put on this earth for. And I know that that's kind of part of the frustration is I don't know what my purpose is.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be all wise, all knowing, all wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's your job is to impact that person, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the Billy Graham of the world. You can be, and that's a very cool place, but you can be a mom,
right,
or a sister or an aunt or a friend, and you can absolutely impact someone's life. You are God's gift to them, so go be it.
Right, and you've said before that you believe that you were put on this earth to help people. It's kind of like what you've come to the conclusion over, what are you, 29 now?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. My. I believe my purpose is to influence people's lives for good,
mm-hmm.
and that can be, for me, a lot of it has to be through encouraging, and for being glad that they're there, mm-hmm. and for, you know, just saying, hey, tell me what's going on in your life today,
mm-hmm.
and like really caring what's going on.
Yeah.
And I get, the thing is, I can do that anywhere. See, that's the thing. I mean, I do it through teaching right now, but I could do that in any job I have. Mm-hmm. I can do that through any one-on-one I'm with. It's how you interact with people. It's how you care about people. It's how you show them that they matter. They are here, and you're just, I can do that.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, because I don't think I'm going to teach forever. Actually, I mean, I'm kind of moving out of teaching, and I can do that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
I think that's it.
All right. Well, that concludes the list of official questions we have, but, you know, 39 seconds left. So I think for posterity's sake again, and the generations to come that would listen to it. So we're in Whitewater, Wisconsin. We're sitting around a, I don't even know, little coffee table recording this amidst husbands. Larry Matthews is here. Andra Matthews, hello. Sibling, daughter, Ben Matthews is in the room. And so it's 2019 today, and we're thank you for taking the time to do this recording. And yeah, this has been really good. So thanks, cool. And we'll see you guys in 3019.
All right.